Hello. I hope that you all managed to have a well-deserved Christmas break since our last podcast in December. To appropriately start 2022, and after a couple of regulatory topics addressed in the 2021 podcast, I thought that discussing a business-related topic would be interesting for the PSF community. We have in Luxembourg quite a number of corporate services which act in the alternative industry and provide services to different kind of products and underlying, being real estate, private equity, debt fund, and so on. This business has been clearly booming since a couple of years, including in Luxembourg. My name is Nicolas Griot. I am an assurance partner at PwC Luxembourg and leader of the PSF practice. And I have the pleasure for today's podcast to welcome Joost Mees, who is Managing Director of JTC Luxembourg. Hello, Joost.
Hi, Nicolas. Thank you very much for the invitation.
You're welcome. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I just came back from a little break, so everything is good on my side.
Perfect. Joost, maybe we could start with a small presentation of yourself and the company slash group you are working in.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Joost Mees. I am an educated lawyer from the Netherlands. I started working in the corporate service industry in 2003 in Curaçao in the Caribbean, and after which I moved to Luxembourg in 2007 to work for Equity Trust, which was then taken over by TMF Group. And I left that firm together with three partners to set up our own corporate service provider called Executive Partners, with whom we joined a JTC group in March 2019 with 32 people staff. And I'm now responsible for the Luxembourg operations of JTC. And the Luxembourg operations of JTC exists in out of three pillars. One is an OEC entity, which provides for the corporate services for sovereign fee entities. We have a PSF, which provides funds admin and depository services. And then we have an own ManCo, which provides all the services the ManCos do.
Okay. And in your industry, and I mean, especially for service providers like JTC, I mean, digitalization is on top of the agenda of most of the players. I mean, how do you manage to incorporate digital tools in your strategy to facilitate business and increase the quality of your services to your clients?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic because technology is either a driver. We see it a little bit differently. We see it as an enabler. So we feel that it should enable us to provide the best services we can, but it shouldn't drive the way we do our businesses. So technology and digitalization should be a support function, but it should not be at the forefront of a services industry as such, because the services does still need to involve a lot of individuals and in the service space. So we try to align our technology and digital resources to our strategic goals, and in that way try to drive efficiency within the businesses by the use of client portals, those kind of things, to facilitate the way we deal with our clients.
And are you using tools that you are buying from providers, or are you developing within the JTC group your own tools?
We do both. I think the industry in the past was very much focused on buying a sort of one-fit-for-all tool. So there's been products on the market which, as an all-round product, will probably be the best product. But if you look at the individual, the different systems, the different individual systems, there's probably better tools to buy on the market. Now, I think now in the 2020s, with enhanced regulation everywhere and the desire to get more out of these systems, I feel that we're moving away again from the all-round systems and focusing on systems which aren't integrated. So we still use an all-round accounting billing system, which we can use globally. But if you look at our document management system, that is now still integrated. We're contemplating whether we want to buy a product of the market which facilitates our needs better. Now, if you then look at investor portals, we use Investran for our fund accounting. They have a portal. We use Pure Funds for the KYC onboarding of our investors. They have a portal. But we want, and we are creating with the support of our US business, a portal which almost serves as an umbrella portal. So interactive, and not only a traffic light system for your KYC information, that the client actually interactively knows what's needed and where he is in the process, but also being able to store the various financial information which is needed, cross funds ideally. But
yeah, and I assume also that the question around those portals is a particular question, in the sense that some of your clients may want a very, I would say, individualized portal, which is really, I would say, linked to their business and the way they see things, rather than, I mean, proposing, I would say, a streamlined portal to all of your clients, which of course for you would be more easy, but may not, I would say, fit your clients' needs.
Yes, I mean, I think if you ask all the clients, they would like to have a dedicated portal with their logos on it and which speaks their language. That isn't possible at this stage, but we try to, depending on the client's needs, indeed make sure that we can almost pick the modules rather than developing an individual tool for everybody.
Mm. Or it's at least having portals which are really, I mean, suitable to one market. You mentioned the US, for example. That is something that makes more sense, because those actors are, I would say, willing to have more or less the same type of information, which makes it a bit easier to implement for you as a company.
Yes, exactly. And ideally, you want to have a portal which is interactive, which communicates back, so that everybody knows where he or she stands with information provision. I think especially on the KYC side, it is getting so complicated in a certain way, the amount of information one needs to provide.
And I don't think it will go in the other direction, unfortunately.
No, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, you know, it just gets complicated, because we have to ask for information, and we have to ask for more information, and for someone in Cayman, it can be completely different than for an investor from Europe. Yep. So you know, we just, I think that's where the key is in the client experience, is how are you able to provide for a soft landing of something which is inevitable?
Hmm. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the portal is used, and of course can be used, to upload KYC information, but the aim is also to provide a tool with information around the product behind, the performance and stuff like that. I mean, it's something quite global, a bit like the web banking access you have with your banking partner here in Luxembourg as an individual.
Yes, exactly. So I think the ideal beast would be a combination of the KYC onboarding portals of administrators like us. Mm-hmm. And almost a web banking portal which provides for the information for the products you and I buy individually, if we need to, and to see those reports and combine that in the dream portal in the industry.
Okay, but there we're not yet there. That's what you mean. I mean, the use is different, and the purpose is different, and therefore it's quite rare to have one system, one size fits all with both information. So currently it's run more on a parallel basis as such.
Yes, yes. We are not there yet. I'm not sure whether there is products on the market which you can buy at this stage, but we as a firm believe that we can build it better than we can buy it at this stage.
Okay, clear. You mentioned also the US earlier before. We see on the market an expansion of the business in the US. I mean, where do you stand in that dimension, and what are the types of discussions you have with US clients?
Yeah, so we have also joined the expansion strategy in the US. We have acquired one business in 2020 and three in 2021 to expand our footprint. NESF, which we acquired in 2020, was very specialized in certain areas. And the recent acquisition, Segway Partners, they provide what we call alternatives, so services to all the alternatives. So sophisticated fund solutions for PE, VC, debt funds, and family offices. Now, the interaction between the US market and the European market is always, I think, has been on the forefront of the minds in the business. On the corporate side, how do you cross-sell your European services to US multinationals, for example, but now for the funds clients indeed. And what we hope to achieve is that we can see an inflow into Europe from across the ocean by leveraging on our US relationships and see if the US fund managers are willing to set up European funds which will attract different investors than their US based funds.
Yeah. Clear. Okay. Well, JTC, and we see it, is quite a dynamic player, trying to expand, to grow also within its clientele. So has shown in the previous years a strong growth. I mean, in the meantime, the alternative industry itself is also booming. How do you see the entities in Luxembourg and the group evolving in the future in terms of growth, but also product offering in terms of diversification?
We've been talking for the past 15 years since I'm in Luxembourg about consolidation. We've seen a big consolidation move, I think, 8-9 years ago, when Vistra and Orangefield joined together, when Intertrust and ATC joined together. And I think now we start to see the same. The increase of regulation provides for that you need to have meat on the bone. You can't do it with the same amount of people what you did in 2015, what you now have to do in 2022.
Yeah.
And in that sense, you need to have some sort of capital. That can be either private equity capital or, in our case, as a listed business. Now, mm-hmm. What's interesting for us to see is that we had three corporate service provider funds, fund admin providers listed on a stock exchange, Intertrust, SAN, and JTC.
Yeah.
Well, Intertrust is about to be delisted, and SAN is also about to be delisted.
In a certain way.
Exactly. So that provides for JTC being the only one which is on the stock exchange. Hopefully that will still give us a bit of a differentiating factor. Because we feel that there is less of a drive of exponential growth throughout the private equity model, mm-hmm. which speaks about 5 to 7 years turnarounds, that kind of sales. In our case, that's not the case. I think one of the factors as well, which has driven the JTC growth, is the fact that our CEO was, I think, effectively employee number 4 of JTC and has pretty much built this business. And he's still the largest shareholder. So together with the CEO, there is an employee benefit trust. And the rest of the staff individually, there's almost 25% of the shares are in the hands of the staff. Mm. So I think that it might actually be a little bit more difficult to get JTC to delist, because you need to find enough sellers. But the fact that Nigel has been involved for so many years, as an entrepreneur setting JTC up from Jersey together with a minority private investor, and now as the CEO, that has given the business its continuity in order to look for growth.
Hmm. It's great, because you look like someone who worked in the JTC group for 10, 15 years, which is obviously not the case. So you really also individually, feel the culture of JTC, you believe in the group, you believe in the business, you believe in the people, and that's also how you want to move forward in the future, I imagine.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, when we left our former employer to set up Executive Partners, we were very much done with big organizations, large groups where you know where finance is almost sort of overarching the business and determines what the business needs to do instead of the other way around. Then after 7 years, as I just said, you feel that you need more manpower to do the same kind of services. We were actively looking for a partner, or we were looking for a partner and actively looking which partner it could be.
Yep.
And then it felt to be quite clear and early in the stage that JTC would be such a partner. Mm. because of the culture once, and also because of the fact that they weren't private equity owned.
Yeah.
So that sort of didn't touch the scars of the past.
Yeah.
So it was a clear choice, I think, between both parties. When we set up Executive Partners, we also had a conversation with JHC about running their office since as per 2013, but we said it's too early now.
Okay.
So there's always been a link between the firms in a certain way.
Okay, so it was a story that began not only when you, I would say, operationally merged, but I mean since you left your former employer to set up Executive Partners that was bought a couple of years after by JTC.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe last question which is more, I would say, more medium term view as such. AIFMD offers the possibility, I mean, in the draft directive, to have this depository outside Luxembourg. Is this something that could really change the way you are doing business or lead to the expansion strategy of JTC within other European countries?
It's a very good question, because depository is a hard nut to crack. I believe not because depository services are very different than, or because there's an issue with the depository as such. But it's also related to the banking access in Luxembourg.
Exactly.
It's very hard to open corporate cash accounts if you provide for depository services in-house as a fund administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Because banks, they don't want to take the risk just for a corporate cash account. So in the back of your head, there's always a question, how do we combine these two? So if it would be able to do it in other member countries, I don't think it will effectively change what's going to happen. I think we need to answer the banking question as a jurisdiction next to looking at the alternatives of Luxembourg depository.
Hmm.
Now, in its acquisition strategy or the acquisition expansion of 2021, JHC has also acquired Indos, which is an independent depository service business, which was set up in the UK and now also has a Irish license. So, in a certain way, we are already prepared for what might happen in AIFMD 2, because we could provide similar services to our clients from Ireland.
When you mean licensed in Ireland, banking licensed in Ireland?
Yeah, so a special depository license.
A special depository license, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so not the banking license, but the special depository license.
But which includes financial assets, not like in Luxembourg, where this depository license you can have as a PSF is only exclusively for non-financial assets.
I believe it does.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Joost, for this insightful discussion. Is there any topic you want to address before we close the session?
Well, I think the two topics which are now on our radar is the new KYC questionnaires or the similar KYC question, but the new process with especially with the registered AIFs with regards to the CSF and the audit on the processes which is now being implemented. I don't know whether you have already any view of that from a sort of a PwC standpoint in how that process is being done, whether there's been a lot of pre-meetings with the CSF, because I can imagine that it's for you guys also a lot of additional work, which came, well, I wouldn't say out of the blue, but as a bit of a Christmas surprise.
Yeah, but the Christmas surprise, it's specifically for the Menco, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, we had a couple of discussions with the CSSF and are involved in those discussions since I would say early 2020 or even the years before, because this is a topic that is high on the agenda for the CSSF now since a couple of years. And I would say, you know, for the banks, there is the long form. For the PSF, there is the long form or the compliance report.
Mm-hmm.
But there was basically nothing for management companies. And so they took the opportunity indeed to, issue those circulars asking us as external auditors to give or to perform some procedure on the KYC procedures in place within entities. That's the first point. Mm-hmm. And the second point, it's also on all the governance aspects. So here, I mean, it's a lot of work. That's something that that will also have costs for the industry as such, which is what was a bit put on the table by the players, in a sense that, I mean, this exists in Luxembourg, but not in other jurisdiction, i.e. Ireland. So to find the right balance between both. And so we will see where we will land this year with, I mean, the work, the underlying work we'll need to do. But what will be also interesting to see it, what will be the benefits on the products themselves, because for the CCAVs as such, the long form may disappear. So there will be also, I would say, a kind of a bit more work here, but a bit less on the product side as such. But yes, it's a challenge. And again, specifically for very small players, because when you work with a Menco with 3, 4, 5 employees, it's not like a big flagship Menco which has hundreds of employees and which is, I mean, have everything documented, everything properly structured within the entity. You know, that's a bit what is the complexity in Luxembourg. Very small ones, especially in the alternative business where there are a lot of, versus the biggest one.
No, and even at the level of sort of the self-managed AVEs, there's also these forms to be built. Yep. And some of these are sort of one-purpose vehicles, and they have to fill in a lot of information about things which actually are not always applicable now.
Exactly.
The question is, do you prepare one form for all? And then, you know, I don't know, look at the individual exemptions, or do you provide for a form? I don't have the answer for it.
Do you need really to focus individually on each item where you know exactly that the way it's managed, it's quite similar from one entity to another? I think this year will be really the first exercise around that. And I think both the market, but also, I mean, the external auditors will learn on how to deal with it, but also the regulator. And then we'll see which direction it takes in the next years, I would say.
Yeah. But you are already hiring.
But we are always hiring. I think you do also. I mean, the market is really dynamic. Alternative industry, as we said, is booming. You need more people, we need more people, and so yes, we are hiring in Europe, outside of Europe.
Okay.
And because it's not always easy to find the appropriate profiles within Europe, and so
and to keep them. For us, that's the biggest challenge, to keep people, because I think the resistance to leave or the desire to stay, well, whatever is, I mean, I think the result is the same. It just gets smaller and smaller, and people leave for a variety of reasons, and so a lot of times, or sometimes very appropriate, but a lot of times just because there's a little bit of a bigger incentive at the other side, and then we start the carousel, and eventually everybody needs to pay more for someone of the same statute.
Yeah.
Of the person who just left, and I find that so frustrating. That
me too,
because I never know whether the answer is just to pay everybody more. I don't think that's the answer.
No, I don't think neither. And there is a clear war. And I had not later than today a discussion with one of my manager who basically is currently facing the situation where he has another employer offering him 30% more. We cannot from one day to another say to all our employees, we want to keep you, we offer you 30% more. It's just not possible.
No.
And is it the right, I would say, reason to leave or not? Again, that's really personal and depends on each and every individual.
Yeah.
So, it's tough. But I mean, honestly, I prefer being in such an environment where business is booming than in another one where we would more be afraid of facing decrease in terms of turnover or...
That's also true.
Great.
Super. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joost. Thank you to all the people who listened. Wish you a great day and see you soon in our next... Oh, no, not see you, but listen to you soon, or to me, in the next podcast. Bye-bye. Bye, Joost.
Bye. Thank you very much, Nicolas.